Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Dog.com. For everything and anything dog, shop Dog.com today for all the top brands. Greenies, Frontline, Kong, Nylabone, Royal Canin, and more. Shop at Dog.com and use the promo code SADDOC, S-A-D-D-O-C, and get $15 off your order of $75 or more.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
One of my favorite experiences in the whole world is being slathered with sour milk kisses from a six-week-old puppy or kitten. What could be more innocent? The majority of the time, this is a perfectly harmless act. But there are instances that can lead to some serious health concerns. My guest today is Dr. Jeffrey Rohde. He's a veterinarian who's concerned not only with the health and well-being of his animal patients, but also that of the entire family that lives with them. Dr. Rohde will inform us what we need to know and do in order to share a happy, healthy life and home with our pets. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's a movement afoot. ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code DOCTOR, D-O-C-T-O-R, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DOCTOR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand. This is the place for a special paparazzi treat, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Rohde, thank you so much for being with us. Most people don't think that our pets could possibly ever get us ill. Is it that common?
It really isn't. However, it is possible. There are certain people who are more at risk than other people if a person is immunosuppressed, meaning their immune system isn't working well. An example would be if someone is affected with HIV/AIDS, especially if they have a low cell count. If someone's undergoing intensive chemotherapy, or if they're in intensive therapy to prevent rejection from an organ transplant, those people don't have a normal immune system, and certain infections that would not occur in a normal person or would be successfully fought off by a normal person's immune system will tend to cause disease in them.
So these are the same people that have to be concerned with just catching a cold from being in a grocery store with somebody who sneezes on them.
Very much so. Very much so. Certain people don't, especially children and the mentally challenged who are significantly mentally challenged, don't really understand or obey the laws of personal hygiene. They'll go out and they'll play in the dirt. They might eat the mud pie they're making. They might just sit there and not wash their hands after they've gotten very, very dirty, and then they'll go in and eat, or they'll make their food without washing their hands, and those are people who are at significant risk. Getting sick by your household pet, if you have a normal immune system, is not very common, and if you do get sick, most of the time, it's not that serious. So it can happen. It happens in a significant number of cases in houses that have scabies. It's a mite infection of dogs that gets very itchy. That is quite possible. 30 to 40% of the families that have a dog with scabies will also have scabies in one or more of the people. What they see there is little bug bites or little dots on parts of the body that become very itchy. And also ringworm, which is a fungal infection. The same kind of fungal infection that causes nail bed infections. It's called a dermatophyte. And that kind of infection of the skin is quite contagious in some dogs and some cats. And again, maybe 30% of the families that have a pet with ringworm will show up with ringworm in the family. But the most important thing you can do is if you have a pet that's got a skin problem, or you suspect has a skin problem, or your vet has told you has one of these problems, just make sure you wash and try and avoid extreme prolonged or really close contact with them while they're undergoing treatment.
It's one of the things I have to admit, it's moderately embarrassing, but my excuse is I was a pre-veterinary student, and in Orange County, California, we had an area called Lion Country Safari, and you could drive through this preserve and see lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. And they had an area where they had cheetahs that were in a breeding facility. And I did not realize that cheetahs were animals, wild animals, that you could pretty much walk around with if they had been fed and you didn't have to worry too much about being attacked. Well, I went up there with the veterinarian. I was a pre-vet student, and we went to this compound, the breeding cheetahs, and they had some of the cubs that we were taking from this facility and moving it into the health center. Well, he said, they have ringworm, and it just didn't register with me at all. So I had a little blouse on, and I'm playing with the kittens, and I'm bringing them down. They were the cutest things in the entire world, and I must have had an itch on my chest, so scratched and didn't pay much attention to it. So about a week or so later, I'm taking a shower, and I look down, like, ah! What's that? And it turned out, I now had ringworm. So it can happen to anyone.
You know, and I've been affected by a similar situation. My brother-in-law's dog had scabies, and lo and behold, next thing I know, I'm getting treated for scabies. I treat all sorts of pets, and I'm not quite sure which one gave it to me, but I was sick one summer with salmonella.
Oh,
and,
fun.
And then I was I got a severe case of parrot fever, which wasn't diagnosed very quickly, but I was in the hospital with a temperature of 105 and pneumonia. So it happens to everybody, and it's a lot of times you don't know where you get it, but pets are certainly a possibility, and veterinarians are a more significant risk perhaps than anyone else, especially their staff.
It was interesting because I was just doing some web browsing before you and I got on air, and I think it was MSN on the homepage. They had one of those quick little pop-ups. It was a gentleman, looked like he was military or retired, some such thing, his hat. But parrot fever killed this man. Was the pet store responsible? Why don't you kind of discuss, since this is in the news right now, topical, what is parrot fever and how would somebody get it from a pet store?
Well, parrot fever is an illness that is also known as psittacosis. It's caused by a bacterium known as chlamydia. It's not the kind of chlamydia that is part of a sexually transmitted infection. But it is quite common in certain birds. A lot of birds will carry this infection without being overtly ill, which I ought to probably say that the chlamydia that we see in the infection in cat's eyes is also not this particular chlamydia. This chlamydia is pretty specific to birds. And what happens is, if you are exposed to the birds that might be shedding chlamydia in their poop, and of course their urine because it comes out the same hole, or if you're a veterinarian and you've done surgery and been exposed to tissues or blood that has it, and somehow or another it gets into your system, then you can get very sick. Again, not very common. A lot of birds have it again and don't really shed it, or if they do shed it, they shed it very intermittently, and they don't necessarily appear ill. So you need to be very careful around birds. My guess is that this pet store might have had some sanitary issues, and either that or a bird out on the floor that unbeknownst to them had chlamydia, I don't know. Perhaps the bird also became ill fairly soon after this, in addition to the man becoming very ill. But it's that much more important to, this case kind of highlights, and I don't know the details of it, but it kind of highlights the idea that if you are sick, you need to try and remember to tell your doctor, well, I did go to the pet store, I did this. When I was in the hospital, an infectious disease specialist came in and he said, ooh, a veterinarian with a high fever, this might be interesting. And he just went off and we started talking, I think, because I had a temperature of 105. People tell me we started talking. But it was important because he knew I was a veterinarian, which put a whole number of illnesses on the list of things he might consider that he never would have considered in the majority of the population.
I think that brings up a really good point. Oftentimes, you'll take your, especially if you're a parent and you have cats and dogs and that child becomes ill, you take it to your pediatrician and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And oftentimes, you don't say, oh, by the way, I have a pet. You know, even if the pet doesn't appear ill. And in the other vein, there are oftentimes people will come in, a woman in particular, with a cat going, I need to have this cat tested for toxoplasmosis. Going, oh, are you pregnant? Going, oh, am I showing? Going, no, but that's about the only time people ask for this test. So it really is important for MDs and DVMs to talk to each other of health issues that are going back and forth for the entire family, it sounds like.
I agree completely, and I want to get onto the topic of toxo in just a second, the toxoplasmosis. But interestingly, I have had a number of cases where people will bring their dog in because they were told by their MD that their dog might carry strep, and that streptococcus, the one that causes strep throat in people, might be carried by dogs. And the fact is that's extremely rare, if it occurs at all. The majority of people that have strep going through their house don't have strep in their pet. What happens is the strep hides in the tonsils, in the area of the tonsils in people. And sometimes there's one person in a house who may or may not be getting sick as often, has the strep bug in them, and that's the source of someone might need their tonsils out. But people will come in saying, my doctor said to culture my dog's throat, and I said, well, I can almost guarantee you we're going to grow strep, but it's not going to be the strep that causes strep throat in people, which is what's called a beta strep. We'll often grow alpha strep, which is a strep, but it's not the strep throat bug. And you mentioned toxo. That's something that MDs and veterinarians to be on the same page about. Most of the MDs that I've had the chance to deal with are exceptionally knowledgeable. And years and years ago, and I've been doing this, unfortunately, I won't tell you how long, but...
We're seasoned veterinarians, yes.
Yes, yes, we can say that. If we were a golf ball, we'd be, you know, previously used or experienced, experienced golf balls. I think that years ago, I would get people coming in and saying, my OBGYN said I need to get rid of my cat.
Yes.
We don't see that anymore. I think that everybody's on board. Toxo is an illness of cats that, and cats don't have to be ill when they have this, but they will shed the parasite in their stool. And pregnant women really should not be around the cat litter. They should not change the cat litter. They should not certainly clean the litter box, because if you clean it, you can pop some of those parasites up into the air in little aerosols and breathe them in. And so that's a concern for pregnant women. But the real issue is that the majority of people who have cats don't get infected with toxo at the specific time where you have to worry. You have to worry usually in the first trimester of pregnancy. And even then, you have to worry only if it's the first time you've been infected. And it's amazing how many people, when tested by blood test by their OBGYN, will show up that they've already been exposed to toxo. And that could just be from long-term contact with cats. And if you have a positive test, your risks to your baby are markedly reduced, because it really is the first time infection that's the problem. And, you know, when the cats get a lot of bad press on this, and that's understandable because there is a risk there, but basically, one of the most common ways you can get toxoplasmosis is by eating improperly cooked meats like pork. And that's a big risk, and everyone needs to know about that too.
And isn't it true that also gardening without gloves is another source if your neighborhood cats are coming and pooping in your yard?
Oh, absolutely, especially if you have cuts on your hand. And while we're on it, we might as well say that ringworm doesn't always come from animals. Gardening is probably one of the most common ways you get ringworm. There are a majority of ringworm-type organisms that live in the soil, and not all of these are contagious to other people or contagious from pets. So that's an important thing. I do a lot of work with small mammals, and small mammals like rabbits and rodents and sugar gliders and hedgehogs, they get fungal infections like ringworm, but the majority of them don't get the one that's contagious to people directly. It's a slightly different organism. It doesn't cause as bad a problem. It might cause a little problem with the scalp, but as opposed to being the ringworm from dogs and cats, this ringworm is not really a contagious thing. Now, it's not to say it's not a risk, but it's an extremely minimal one compared to the dog and cat. And frankly, gardening is probably the most common source of ringworm in my experience.
How did you get involved in zoonotic diseases, these diseases that are shared from people to pets? Because I know you are not board certified, but you have this great knowledge and you've written books on the subject.
Well, actually, I haven't written a book. I did write a chapter recently. Asked by a gentleman, I believe, well, his name is Radford Davis, and I'm, for the life of me right now, I'm forgetting what university he's from, but he is actually an expert in zoonotic diseases, and he is getting a book published. He's editing a book. It's supposed to be published late in 2011, and it is entitled Animal Diseases and Human Health, Shaping Our Lives Now and in the Future. And he asked a number of veterinarians to contribute to the book, and I volunteered to write the section on small mammals, because my practice is only 60% dog and cat, and another 30% or 30% of my practice is devoted to small mammals like ferrets, rabbits, rodents, sugar gliders, and hedgehogs. So I really didn't have a lot of knowledge other than basics. So I did an awful lot of research for that. It's kind of a new field for me in the sense of actually writing to educate people. But this book is targeted at, I believe, high school seniors and undergraduate students in college. So it's a great way to get people exposed to the idea. And it was really important for me because one of my favorite veterinarians out in California, his name is Brian Spear out in Oakley, California. He's an avian-only veterinarian. He works only with birds. But he talks a lot about a concept that he considers to be pathogen awareness, meaning a pathogen is something that causes disease, versus pathogen paranoia, which is getting hypervigilant and concerned about everything, and there's always bugs, and we shouldn't really be concerned about them. If we were to walk around in the world with a microscope attached to our eyes, we would find out that absolutely nothing is sterile. There are bacteria everywhere and viruses everywhere, and we live normal lives, and we actually need some certain bacteria in our intestinal tracts to be normal and to actually function normally. So it's very important not to get overly concerned about zoonotic illnesses, but it is important to be aware. As I say in the book, and I would like to say to all of your listeners, that there is no question in my mind that the risks of zoonotic diseases are greatly, greatly outweighed by all the benefits we get from our pets. So I don't want anyone to think that this is an up and growing field that we're just identifying problems. It's very important to realize that our pets are, for the most part, 100% safe in that regard. And usually personal hygiene, avoiding animals or frankly anyone in the mall if you have a severe immunocompromised, if you're severely immunocompromised, your immune system isn't functioning, one of those things we talked about earlier.
So, Dr. Rohde, it sounds as though I grew up in a time where, I made mud pies and I ate, mud pies too, and we drank water out of hoses that weren't water safe, and did all sorts of things that just nowadays you go, oh my goodness, you have to have the water safe hose and everyone has these hand sanitizers and everything is Clorox and we all become very germ phobic. Do you agree that the society has become kind of germ phobic, but we need some germs in our lives?
I agree with you that we need germs in our life, and I also agree that and I believe a lot of MDs agree that hand sanitizers are a good idea in the healthcare field because you don't want to take bugs from person to person or from dog to dog. A lot of times I'll work with a lizard and then I'll go in and see a bunny, or I'll work with a cat that might have had a ringworm and then I go in to see somebody else. I want to make sure my hands are clean and my clothes are clean before I go see that new pet. But in general, use of hand sanitizers and use of the ones especially that are considered to be bactericidal or bacteriostatic, the ones that are antibacterial, they can be a real problem because we may very well be creating some bugs that are resistant to the ordinary things that would kill them. And that is one of the concerns with MRSA, the very bad staph infection, and that's that are we creating, by being very, very paranoid and concerned about germs, are we creating some problems for ourselves as well?
Well, I'm paranoid. If we don't take a quick break right now, our sponsors are not going to like us. So I'm talking right now with Dr. Jeffrey Rohde. He's a veterinarian who's involved with health of his entire patient and client base, wanting to make sure that we're all healthy, our pets as well as the people. So we'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
At Petco, we really love pets. There isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
"So how do you feel about cat condos?"
we can say from experience,
"Feels like home for her."
Enter the code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Hello?
Danica, where have you been?
Oh, Grandma, I've been busy, racing, GoDaddy girl.
Oh, I built my own online store with GoDaddy.
Really? Let me see. GrandmasAuction.com. Hey, aren't those Grandpa's golf clubs?
Grandma needs her bingo money.
Use promo code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get a .com domain name for just $7.49 at GoDaddy.com.
to ask the question, what do I want? What do I need? I'll take affection. Irene should mention, I need time, I need love, I crave attention.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available in iTunes.
Pet Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets with your Paranormal Pets ghostly host, Dusty Rainbolt, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Rohde, you brought up something, MRSA, that a lot of people have heard about. My own niece had a little dog that she rescued. It had a lesion on its leg that just didn't seem like it was going to be clearing up. She lives far enough away from me that it wasn't convenient for her to come to me. So she went to a veterinarian, immediately got on the phone after the visit and said, oh my God, this dog has MRSA, and I understand it's contagious to people. And oh, by the way, her dad is an MD surgeon, and we're all just kind of going crazy as to what was the likelihood of the people getting it and what was the concerns. Tell us a little bit about MRSA, if you would.
I'd be glad to tell you what I know, but I am very, very far from an expert. First, I have never been involved with a case involving MRSA. MRSA is actually an acronym for what's considered to be methicillin-resistant staph aureus. Now, what that means is it's a staph infection, a bacterial infection, but it's significantly resistant compared to other forms of staph. So not all staph infections are MRSA.
And we all have staph on our skin.
As normal things on our skin,
right.
Absolutely. The problem with MRSA is, number one, it is contagious, from my understanding. There's a public health risk with MRSA. As a matter of fact, there was a MRSA alert at my son's ear infection, and that does create the situation where people might be concerned about MRSA. And hygiene at that point and preventing it contact with others from the rash becomes very important. And while there are drugs that will work with MRSA, and you know, certainly not everyone has severe complications from it, it can be very serious in people. And again, you know, are we creating our own problems by overdoing it with trying to kill regular bugs?
It is, I can always tell, you know, the new mothers also, because everything needs to be sterilized. And by the time they hit baby number two or three, is they pick up the binky off the ground that's fallen out of the baby's mouth, you know, clean it off on their pant leg and go here.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever happened to the 5-second rule anyway? I don't understand that.
Oh, yeah. I think we've all used that one. Salmonella, we're hearing a lot about in the news. Pet food recalls seem to be left and right. It's hitting big companies, as well as small, some of these organic companies, these natural whole raw diet gamut. Now, you said you had salmonella. What's your words of wisdom on this disease?
Again, not to panic. I think that the without a question, the most common sources are raw chicken and eggs. Improperly cooked eggs. The majority of times, poultry does shed salmonella normally in their poop. And what happens is the eggs get contaminated, and if they aren't properly cleaned, that can be a problem. And of course, there's poop, so there's poop on their skin and on their feathers and down. And in a chicken processing plant, there might not be adequate control. So you will occasionally get exposed to salmonella if you don't properly cook your meat. Properly cooking your chicken will definitely take care of that.
And Dr. Rohde, also, Isn't it true that also a lot of people are trying to go to these free-range birds and free-range eggs because they think it's going to be healthier, but you can also have problems with them too?
Well, there's nothing different about those free-range animals than will be in the chicken coop, so to speak. They still have salmonella, and again, if the product itself is not processed safely or with good hygiene, or even if it is, if people aren't doing what they're supposed to do to that particular food product in the house, then it's not going to be any safer than any other chicken meat. And, you know, they always say, well, clean up really well after you're done cutting up your chicken, the raw stuff. Make sure you wash your hands after you take care of eggs. Because if you properly cook the food, you're not going to have a problem. If you remember back a while ago, there was always a concern about E. coli. E. coli was a big, big problem in meats. And again, if you cook your food properly, you're not going to have that problem. Another common source of salmonella we're hearing a lot is vegetables and things like that. And again, there are lots of animals that spread salmonella, and it's a normal inhabitant in a lot of those animals. And again, if the vegetables aren't washed properly, you can have problems. And it all comes down to a matter of making sure that you do what you need to do at home to make sure your foods are safe. Wash up, clean off your eggs, clean your hands in between handling things, cook your food properly, and you're not going to have a problem. The majority of cases, wash off your vegetables, make sure they've been cleaned. Those same people who want to use the free-range chickens also don't want pesticides on their food or herbicides on their food. And they are also going ahead, and you need to wash those off as well. So it's not just salmonella that's a risk, but there are lots of risks. But salmonella does get a lot of press, and unfortunately there are a lot of issues like the big egg recall. And I think what happens is someone gets sick or someone is identified as having salmonella, having eaten that particular batch of food, and then the company voluntarily recalls a whole bunch because they want to make sure that they go back and do some quality control in their plant and make sure that that they're doing the proper things. But for the most part, if you're doing the proper things in your home, you're going to be fine.
One of the things I found quite interesting from an article that I was reading, and I do have a lot of young families at my practice, is saying, okay, don't put your dog's bowl in the kitchen, because often cats or dog bowl, because the children will be in there and they're playing with it. Sometimes little kids find, for whatever reason, it's fun to carry the bowl around and they can get exposure that way. And one of the things I have to admit, I was doing it myself and it's like, duh, this is not really intelligent. I have 3 cats. I am the good kitty mommy, and I wash off their little plates and get them all nice and clean and doing it in the kitchen. And, of course, the same scrub sponge that I'm using to wash the kitty dishes, duh, I was using to wash my own dishes. And thankfully, I haven't gotten ill. But, yes, that is a possible way of spreading disease. So don't use the same sponge on your own dishes on the counter and for your pets. Separate sponges for dairy
pets. I do the same thing you do. I still do it, but it's probably the best thing for us as educators of the public to tell people that's probably not a good idea.
Probably
for the same
not.
Reason that we talk, you know, people will come in and go, isn't a dog's mouth sterile? Isn't it the cleanest thing on their body? And my comment is usually, well, when they were born, maybe, but just think about where it's been.
Licking
so
their bum,
stay
yes.
Stay that way.
Speaking of things that are might not the cleanest, what are some of the environmental concerns? So it's not just, here's your pet, but now the children are going outside and swimming in the stream or playing in the sandbox. What are some concerns there?
Well, it's not always children. But there are some concerns, and I can't speak to all of them because it's, number one, it's an extremely wide range of things, and some of them are not in my bailiwick, so to speak. I don't want to talk about things that I'm not comfortable with.
tell me things you are comfortable with.
Well, I certainly, in doing the research for this particular book, there are a lot of concerns about certain parasite infections in public water systems that aren't handled correctly. Dirty swimming pools. There's an illness called cryptosporidia. There's an illness called...
Leptospirosis is one.
Leptospirosis and a couple others, Giardia, for example. Those are all concerns in non-potable water and in swimming pools if things aren't handled right, the chlorination level isn't kept up to speed. So that's a concern. When you talk about the sandboxes, well, there are lots of animals that will go to the bathroom in sandboxes. Outside cats will do that, feral cats will do that, raccoons might do that, foxes, and a lot of them do carry illnesses. Not to, the wild cats can certainly have toxoplasmosis, but that's probably not the most common thing. One of the more common things we see are dog parasites, the parasites called roundworms and hookworms. And roundworms, when a child or anyone else were to, if they're to ingest poop that has eggs that are ready to infect a dog, they can also infect people. As opposed to dogs who get an intestinal infection, a lot of people get other kinds of infections from these parasites. The dog parasite in the dog, after it gets into the intestine, does migrate through the body a little bit, and people can get what a condition called visceral larval migraines, or VLM, where it can, you can get problems in the organs like the liver related to this parasite migrating where it's not supposed to go, or at least in human beings it never does go. More importantly, there's a condition called ocular larval migraines, and that's where this parasite ends up in the eye. And what it creates a tremendous amount of inflammation. And the concern that we have with ocular larval migraines is, number one, it is a very treatable problem if it's caught early. But even if it's not caught early, it gets confused. Some ophthalmologists, some MDs confuse it with a tumor of the retina called a retinoblastoma. And at which point, if it's not diagnosed properly, the child is treated as if it has cancer, which is perhaps not the best thing to do for ocular larval migraines. The other thing, you mentioned sandboxes on the beach or in sandboxes where a lot of people run barefoot. Dog parasites called hookworms are in the stool, and if the eggs are ready and the larvae of the young worms are ready, they will actually migrate through the skin of the person and create, in some people, a very intensely itchy rash. It's called cutaneous larval migraines, meaning it went through the skin and the larvae is migrating through the skin. So there are concerns about outdoor, even routine outdoor problems with our household pets and some wild animals. One of the more common things that we hear talked about in the veterinary literature, number one, is an illness called Bayless ascaris, and that's the raccoon roundworm. And the raccoons, unfortunately, in suburbia and in sometimes in urban areas and even in the rural areas, their poop can contain roundworm eggs. And if people were to ingest that, or frankly other animals like rabbits were to ingest that raccoon roundworm egg, they can become affected. And Bayless ascaris has a tendency to cause significant problems in rabbits, and it can cause significant problems in people if it's not identified early. The majority of people don't have a problem at all, and we're considering right now that Bayless ascaris in people is probably underreported because it just never gets diagnosed. But it can cause serious neurologic problems, and it's probably not a good idea. One of the other risks of people, of kids eating mud pies that are maybe contaminated with poop, raccoon poop can be involved as well, in addition to dog and cat poop. So there are risks with that. Hunters and landscapers are really prone to develop a problem called tularemia. Tularemia is a bug that's generally carried, it's a bacteria generally carried by rabbits. And it's usually wild rabbits, not pet rabbits. And wild rabbits, of course, poop in landscape areas. They frequently will do that. So landscapers will frequently contact this bug and get big infected rashes and ulcers on their hands. They're at a higher risk than perhaps anybody else. In the winter time, when landscapers aren't involved, we will frequently see hunters becoming infected with tularemia because they're actually hunting rabbits and skinning the rabbit. So there are certain groups of professions or occupational things, hobby things, that can create an increased risk for you. Tularemia is one of them. Leptospirosis, you had mentioned that earlier, is also a big one. we used to think this was only a contaminated water problem in the rural areas because the cows would urinate and the water would go downstream into the urine, the downflow of the urine. Well, actually, it's becoming more and more common in cities. As a matter of fact, I was just reading something today from some folks out at Cornell saying they are seeing a lot of it in toy breed dogs, the dogs you'd never expect to get leptospirosis because they almost never hit the ground because they're being carried. These smaller dogs are getting lepto. There was actually, I did some research on this, there were actually a number of serologic studies done in multiple cities, and a wide number of the rats, a vast number percentage-wise, carried leptospirosis in their urine, and they tested positive for exposure to leptospirosis, and rats are a big problem. There was actually a case report in a veterinarian where he handled what seemed to be a perfectly normal pet rat, but he also had the unfortunate circumstance where he had a lot of wounds on his hand because he had gone out gardening. Luckily, he didn't catch ringworm or tularemia, but he went out gardening, and this rat urinated on him, which if anyone works
that,
with
that
rats,
happens.
As soon as you lift them, they tend to pee. Well, and, you know, everything went fine. He sent the rat home, but he developed leptospirosis because the bacteria entered through his wounds. So there are significant risks with wildlife as well. And, of course, we always have to be careful about rabies. Rabies is very common in my area. I'm in Maryland, where rabies frequently tops number two in the country. Texas is often number one. But in this area, raccoons and foxes are extremely commonly affected. And we have to be careful about the rat, the raccoon or the fox. It doesn't act right. The one that comes up on your porch just seems friendly. In raccoons, they can do that because everyone in the neighborhood's feeding them. But you still have to be concerned. They shouldn't approach you. They shouldn't attack you. And if that seems to be the case, you need to call someone who can come out and help you trap them, because that is a big risk for everyone involved, for everyone.
And if you do get bitten by that animal and they don't know, many times it is going to require that you're going to be getting that prophylactic rabies treatment. And thankfully, I found out that it's no longer in the belly. You know, we all think, oh, those belly shots. Well, now it's in the arm, but still you don't want to put yourself in that harm's way. Dr. Rohde, you have just given us some wonderful information that we need to be cautious but not paranoid. Any other parting words? Because I think we could go on for a long time. You have great information.
Well, we could go on forever. As a matter of fact, we could go on for the entire chapter that I wrote, plus the entire book, because the entire book that Radford's writing is all sorts of pets and all sorts of animals. I'm sure cows and horses are included. I know dogs and cats are included. So there's a lot of information out there. If people want to learn more about zoonotic illnesses, my suggestion is that you visit the Center of Disease Control website. It's cdc.gov. And you can look, search under zoonosis, or if you have a specific disease in mind, you can search under that. And they'll frequently have fact sheets that'll give a one-page blurb on pretty much everything you need to know about that particular illness. And it's a wonderful resource that not everybody's aware of.
Great information. I do appreciate it. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and we've been talking with Dr. Jeffrey Rohde. I want to also thank one of the listeners, Brooke Payton. She, at my request, sent in one of her ideas of what she wants on a segment to learn about. It's going to be limber tail. And in a few weeks, we're going to be talking to Dr. Wayne Berry. He's a neurologist, veterinary neurologist, talking about limber tail and the sudden collapse syndrome that many Labradors will also, and other breeds too, will experience. So thank you very much for listening. Our goal is always to allow you to be the best pet owner that you can possibly be. Please listen again next week. We'll have more information on The Pet Doctor. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.